From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford at studio this morning. I am going to attempt to get through today's show and tonight's shows. We'll be at Funky's on the Oxford Square again for a live version of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Two opportunities to hear from us today. Specials tonight, $12 pepperoni pizza, $2 domestics, and we'll have some other things for you as well. So come out, have a good time. We'll talk Ole Miss, Alabama, and a lot more, and probably including going through Neil's picks again today on the show. Cecil Hurt for sure going to join us, the columnist in the state of Alabama, one of the elder statesmen in that state from a journalism standpoint. And then usually Jeffrey on Thursdays, if we get him, great. He does have a job. He's got some stuff going on. So we will maybe attempt to work
tired of his excuses, man.
It's almost like, you know, I mean, we might cut his pay from zero to less than zero if he's not careful.
I expect to be the damn priority.
Yeah. You do kind of come to expect it, though, and then forget it. He goes, yeah, he does have a job. He has something going on.
Tired of excuses.
Not really your problem, is it?
That's a him problem.
As a coach once told me, how does that affect me?
Exactly. You
know, except use third person for that one. yeah.
How does that affect Coach Childress? It doesn't. Yeah. I tell you.
Yeah, I can't tell that story on air. Anyway. All right, Cecil Hurt and more today on the show. I have a pretty good show for you today. The Oxford Exxon, the title sponsor every single day for a long time now. Appreciate those guys. Again, my voice is all over the place. Probably
suck
need a
it
shot.
Up, Parham. Let's go, man.
I'm trying. If you need some catering, Oxford Exxon is the way to get that taken care of for the Grove this weekend. Three slabs of ribs, $33. You get a couple pounds of pulled pork as well. You get quart size sides as well there at the Oxford Exxon. A lot of different options to take care of your tailgate and your catering this weekend with Oxford Exxon, Speed Pass Plus, daiquiris. What else could you want except maybe the pimento cheese bites, and those are next door at the Oxford Crystal. So get all those things there on Highway 6 West. And to get there, maybe you're in a Clark Ford from Amory.
You should get a Clark Ford, and it's easy to do. You call 662-257-1900. You don't live in Amory, it's okay. You don't have to. Call Clark Ford, ask for a quote. Tell Corey what you're looking for. Maybe give him a couple options. He'll send you some quotes within 15 minutes in business hours. Truly that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. You're going to get a quote. You're going to say, okay, so that's my deal at Clark Ford. And then it's up to you. If you want to shop, you can. If you want to look for a, quote, better deal, you can. That's all doable. You're going to end up coming right back to Corey and the people at Clark Ford because they're going to get you right to the bottom line faster than anyone will. You get a great deal. You get great service after the sale, delivery options, all of the things that you could possibly want from your car dealer, your truck dealer. Corey Clark and Clark Ford will be that for you. 662-257-1900. Tell them that you heard about Clark Ford on our podcast, our family of podcasts. And you'll save $500 on the already great deal at Clark Ford.
On the website this morning, Russell, with a lot of recruiting stuff already up, as well as Thursday is the day that I put up my three and out today that looks at Tua Tagovailoa. With a cold, that is a tough one.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa. Yeah, there you that go. Is correct. Tagovailoa. There's no N in the name, in the pronunciation, like in the spelling, so it kind of I have a hard time with that one for whatever reason.
I think
you always hit that one better than so many other ones. For some reason, that one rolls off your tongue where you struggle with so many other pronunciations.
For whatever reason, a kid who grew up in North Louisiana and who has lived in the South his entire life does not struggle with Samoan/Polynesian names. Go figure. I don't have any idea why. And yet I'll struggle with other stuff.
Like restaurant and things. But
restaurant, you know. Program.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing it to piss Jay off. But
it's regional dialect.
But for whatever reason, there and I know this will shock you, I don't think there was ever a Samoan or a Polynesian in Ruston, Louisiana.
What do you say most often for the carbonated beverage that has syrup in it?
Coke.
You say Coke, no matter what it is?
No.
That's what I'm saying. What is the generic term you use?
Soda.
Yeah, me too. I say soda every time.
I don't say pop.
No, I'm not going there. No,
I think that's more of a northern, midwestern thing.
I've said soft drink some, but soda preferably.
Yeah. Now, my mother said soft drink when we were growing up.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I probably, as a kid, said soft drinks, and then something changed to soda.
So about Tua, it's interesting because I outlined a lot of his complete passing chart is on the site at rebelgrove.com in this content item, but how he stresses the areas of the field that have been a problem for Ole Miss. Ole Miss has not got a lot of pass rush so far this season. He has thrived when not being pressured, as most quarterbacks do, but nonetheless, the stats there to bear it out. And then the other stat that's interesting is teams have been very hesitant to blitz him so far this year. Arkansas State and Louisville have really backed off. They have not blitzed Tua, and that has created a lot of interesting opportunities because when they do, they don't get to him. So he's still kind of killing that as well. So not only do you have to pick your spots blitzing, but you got to be very effective and actually get to the quarterback or he's punishing you. And that goes, you know, next to the two Harrises in the backfield who are averaging 7-something and 6-something per carry, and then are also getting 3-something and 4-something yards per contact after on each carry. They're averaging 3-something and 4-something per carry after contact there so far through two games this season. So not to completely cut off that thought, Jeffrey Wright has informed me that he is going to make time for us today, so thank goodness he finally got his act together this morning and is going to be on the show. We'll get to him here in a little bit, as well as Cecil Hurt. But also in that story this morning, I do a negative rank of cocktails. Just go read it. I have reasons, but I do the 5 most overrated cocktails currently going right now, including one that typically would win a contest. But nonetheless, again, have reasons. And then a thank you note to Henry Ulrich, the elementary schooler that I wrote about earlier in the spring, still dealing, obviously, with muscular dystrophy, had some contact with him and different things, and he helped a recent day of mine. So all that on the site at rebelgrove.com in the main story this morning. Again, recruiting, a lot of podcasts, a beer garden with Ryan Brown will come later on, as well as a soft verbal with Russell Johnson. So those things up on the site as we move forward.
I'm looking forward to getting your cocktail thoughts.
You haven't seen it yet?
I've not. Well, I'll be honest with you. I haven't opened it this morning because I did not want to get kind of super emotional at the end of it. So yeah. I was saving that for a time when maybe I was prepared.
Because when I wrote the feature back in the spring, you waited 2 or 3 days before you read it.
I did.
Yeah.
I give myself this. I criticize myself a lot. I'll give myself this. I have a pretty decent feel for my emotional capabilities.
All right.
And if I know that I'm in a place where I could be on the cusp of it and I don't want to go there.
You can just avoid it.
I can avoid it. If I know that maybe I'm on the cusp of it and I'm at a place where it's okay to go there and let that out a little bit, I'll go ahead and indulge.
Okay, well, we'll go through this quick. We got about 10 minutes in this segment before we move on, and we got lots of football coming up with Jeffrey and Cecil. In the cocktail portion of this, I've got a couple different reasons, and I'll go through. I'll give you the base reason, let you react to it, as well as I'll answer one question that I got on the message board about something that's frankly a little crazy that I do. So, okay. Number one, I had the old fashioned, and my reason for that, as I mentioned on this board, is that typically, if you don't know where you are in a pretty decent bar, it should be a drink that every bartender makes in their sleep perfectly, traditionally. It is alcohol, it is bitters, it is sugar, and you move on with your day.
Yes.
But for whatever reason, now it tastes like an alcoholic Sunkist. So many places you get it where it's all this muddled fruit. It is all this, it's all this soda and different things that is in it. So I've gotten very scared by the old fashioned. I credit it to Mad Men. I can be completely wrong, but I think it got cool to order the old fashioned when people didn't actually like the old fashioned, is my opinion on that.
See, I've gotten to where, to me, when I walk into a bar, it can be my litmus test.
Now that I agree with. I'll say,
how do you do your old fashioned? Now, I know this makes me a snob, but it allows me,
it
allows me to decide, okay, here's what I'm having tonight.
Yeah.
If I walk, I did this in Houston. I went into a bar on Saturday night. I was by myself. I just wanted to have a couple of drinks. I had the Cubs-Phillies game up on my iPad. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be social. I just wanted a drink. And I said, how do you do your old-fashioned? And he kind of looked at me funny. He's like, sugar, bitters, alcohol. Good. I'm in. I'll take one of those. And then from there, I kind of experimented a little bit with some cocktails that were on their menu because I knew now you know how to do your cocktail. If I walk in and I say, well, how do you do your old-fashioned? And they start telling me about muddling. I immediately go, can I see your wine list or what do you have on tap? And I can have a beer. I can have a glass of wine. I just know, or I'm just going to have a bourbon straight on a rock and be done with it. And I know that makes me a jerk and a snob and all of that, but it enables me to kind of know where I am.
So it's that. And I also think it's become a very lazy placeholder for even the whiskey drinker where, hey, if you like the old fashioned and you literally like it the right way, get the Sazerac, get the Manhattan. Let's start right. Moving around a little bit. So just in general, I think it's gotten way too big of a deal because of the bad ways it's prepared. And frankly, the people that order it that want it an incorrect way that is just heightening the issues here. So that's okay. Number one.
All right.
Number two is a Bloody Mary. I like structure to my cocktails. I like, okay, here's how you do this. Here's how you build it. It is tomato, vodka, and whatever else is in your kitchen. And that bugs me. It drives me nuts. It also, I'm allergic to fresh tomato. So I have just sort of inherence to have a problem with this as it is anyway. I break out if I eat raw tomato. Cooked tomato's fine. I eat ketchup on my pizza. Somebody asked me that on the board. I do. There are certain types of pizza that I will eat ketchup on.
Really?
I don't know. When I did it as a kid, and now it's like kind of a nostalgia thing where I don't necessarily like it. But when I was little, I would get thin crust meat lovers from Pizza Hut, and I would eat it with ketchup. And still to this day, if I have a piece of meat lovers thin crust, I will put ketchup on it. I don't have a great reason, but I do it every single time. I need it to be Heinz. I hate Hunt's ketchup. But
Caroline, my daughter, does the ranch thing with ketchup. And I know a lot of people do it. I mean, not ketchup, with pizza. And I don't understand it. That's just me. So I've seen people do Thousand Island.
Yeah.
And I don't
just
do that either.
Just ketchup and mayonnaise.
Yeah. Just give me the damn pizza.
Okay. That's fine. I'm saying.
Cool. It's all good.
I mean, I'm not going to get to Funky's tonight and go, hey, you got a side of ketchup? I mean, I think Pat would look at me a little funny. But I might try it now just to see what kind of reaction I get. Might tell me to go across the street and get some, bring it back. But I don't know. The Bloody Mary bugs me because you got the people that almost have it a sense of honor that they can have. It is hot as hell for no reason just because they can take it. It's like the guy that wants his wings blazing. It's like, come on, dude. You're just being that guy.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that, and there's no structure to it. It's tomato, it's vodka, and whatever else. There might be shrimp in it. There might be celery. There might be cucumber. Who knows?
I don't like a Bloody Mary.
Okay. It drives me nuts. Number three, a mojito. Oh, if you're on the beach, great. If there's a body of water nearby, great. Okay. But who really trusts most landlocked states to do the mojito? Because they don't structure it correctly. They just throw all the crap in a glass. So then you get this really under-alcohol, just oversaturated glob of mint and ice and soda that's not proportioned out correctly in the glass. Because a mojito is a lot like a pyramid. You got to go step, 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 because it's not a stir shake. It's just a build it.
Right.
And when you do that, I think so many places screw that up. So I have problems with mojitos in most places if I cannot see the ocean where I order it.
So far, I'm in total agreement with you. This is almost frightening.
You're not having a lot of problems so far?
I'm in lockstep with you so far, and I'm waiting to disagree so that it would be a more fun podcast.
Yeah, I don't think you're struggling. Going to the whole time. Okay. Number four, a mint julep.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's my issue.
Okay.
Unless you are at a Southern Outdoor picnic or at Churchill Downs, who's ordering a mint julep and where? Because I've done this. I used this example in my story. So in 2011, when I got married, our rehearsal dinner, we go upstairs to City Grocery Bar, and for some reason, I ordered a mint julep. I'd had several drinks. That's the only reason I ordered a mint julep. I still, to this day, get made fun of about it. No one goes to the bar and goes, you know, I'm going to have seven mint juleps tonight, and I'm just going to keep pounding mint juleps. Like, it's not practical. It's not very good. No. And I have no problem against mint, because I'm bashing mojitos and mint juleps back to back here. But
one drink. as a palate cleanser, perhaps, with mint is
but,
one thing.
Yeah, but would you really pick a mint julep for that? I'm going to make sure I clear my palate here. Let me order a mint julep.
No.
Like when it's socially unacceptable to order multiple in a row of something, it's overrated to me. When you can't just sit down and order the drink.
Yeah, I agree.
That's my problem with a mint julep. Like, yeah, if you're at Churchill Downs, and okay, fine, whatever. Have
well, yeah.
When in Rome.
Yeah,
but
of course.
Otherwise, no.
Because there's a certain amount of tradition and stuff with that.
And then I chastised myself on this last one.
Okay.
And it is not something that is rated highly at all. That is not the point. I get to a point in here. As I said, these rankings are not linear for all the same reasons. It's simply a lazy order that I do every single week that I'm going to stop. I'm making a point to this. A vodka or a gin tonic.
Really?
The tonic is bad.
Okay.
When you order a vodka or a gin tonic, again, nobody's like going, oh, this is the best drink in the world. It's just a, okay, that's fine. I'll have this right now. It's a neutral thing. You're normally going to squeeze tons of lime in it to make it give some taste at all.
Yeah.
And it's because you either don't want whatever their specialty is, whether it be a margarita or a daiquiri or wherever you are in this restaurant, or it's that you don't necessarily want a beer, you're not a beer drinker at the time, and you don't trust the whiskey or cocktail selection.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah. I'll get there. Go ahead. Yeah.
We will go, this is our fifth show?
Fifth or sixth, yeah.
Something, at Funky's.
Yeah.
And you and I have both been guilty of this.
I know, I'm telling
week
you right now.
Week after week after week, I'll go in there, like, what do you want? I'm like, I'll just get a
vodka. And it's a lazy order because you don't really know.
I'll get a vodka tonic. Well, because here's why. A lot of times I don't want a beer at that point. I don't know why, I just don't. I don't want one of the daiquiris. I know they're really good, but they're also incredibly high in calories. And I don't want to order this.
Well, and we typically are just getting refills. You're not going to drink four daiquiris over the course of the hour.
Right.
That's the problem with that.
That's 900 calories.
Yeah, if anything, I'll close my night with a daiquiri just to get a taste of half of one, and then I'll move on with my day.
So what are you going to order?
Well, see, that's my point of this. I think when people order the vodka tonic or the gin and tonic, they don't really want that. If you just think about it and you look at the ingredients, there are a lot of simple recipes that you can have. Order a gimlet. Order a real daiquiri that's simply just the rum, the lime juice, and the sugar. There's a couple other things there that really that's what you're wanting. You're wanting a fruit, a citrus flavored neutral spirit. Well, then do it on something that's actually good. A Last Word, a gimlet, a daiquiri, something like that. Instead of what is probably very, very mediocre tonic and vodka thrown into a big glass with some lime juice.
Do they do those at Funky's?
I don't know why they wouldn't. They got the ingredients. I've never asked, but that's my fault.
No, it's true.
If they can make a margarita, that means they've got triple sec. They can do some different things.
Well, that's true.
Why couldn't you?
And I love a good, just a traditional margarita.
Yeah, they have margaritas. Like, okay, right. Fair enough.
You have fresh squeezed lime juice.
Yeah.
You have some simple syrup.
Yeah.
You have triple sec and you have tequila.
Yeah.
I'm good.
That's my point.
Yeah.
No, margaritas have frankly been one of the specials the last few weeks. $4.
All right. Well, you know what? I will accept your challenge this evening.
I'm just saying. That's my thing. I think that it is a lazy order when it's not actually what we want. It's just an easy thing to grab and move on with your day.
I've got, in the end, I just like a really good bourbon or whiskey on a rock.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I don't need all the other stuff.
So, that was my list. And my explanations. You can read more, obviously. I go in more detail.
Well, that's good.
No arguments, huh?
No. I fail to find anything that I disagree with. Even the indictment, I plead guilty. I do the same thing.
The only one that really, really bugs me is the old fashioned because I really like them, and then the Bloody Mary just confuses me.
Well, I love an old fashioned as long as they don't put too much sugar in it. I want just a little simple syrup. I'm going to do what Jonathan Howard, actually I'm going to do it this weekend. Jonathan says make a brown sugar simple syrup.
Yeah, I've heard him say that multiple times.
And just use a little of it. Just a little. You don't want to turn it into a syrup drink.
Right.
Just a little.
Let's go to our guest here in 1 minute before we do that. Speaking of alcohol, Oxford Wine and Spirits, you're coming into town this weekend. Go there. It's next to Lost Pizza on College Hill Road. Neil and I are in there regularly. And the everyday prices are 5% lower than industry standards, and they'll help you out, the podcast guests. You got to stock up. You got to buy a lot of alcohol. So spend $150 or more. When you do that, 5% off wine, 10% off liquor when you tell them you heard about it on the podcast. Again, that's Oxford Wine and Spirits next to Lost Pizza on College Hill Road.
If you're coming in this weekend and you haven't made tailgate arrangements, don't panic. You are kind of pushing it a little, but don't panic. Call 7 South Tailgating. Get in touch with Kyle Thornton and the people there at 7 South at 7southtailgating.com. They're celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try them once. You'll never tailgate without them again. No matter how simple your tailgate is, or how intricate it may be, whether you have your own gear or you need to rent everything from them, they can take care of you. Again, 7southtailgating.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. They offer their customers the best cash checking accounts called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. And with Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry's an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab at the top left. Filter through by what you're looking for. And then send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. And we're brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. I've been doing business with Grenada Nissan for more than 10 years. You can take my word for it. They're awesome. Their customer service is great. Their service after the sale is great. They're just really good people. They've been great to us, to this podcast, to our site. So if you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that is where you should go and tell them that we sent you. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
Now we'll go to Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Jeffrey, good morning. We'll obviously go over picks here in a day or so when it goes live at RebelGrove.com. We've spent a lot of the week just kind of discussing Ole Miss, that defensive performance that wasn't on Saturday against Southern Illinois. Is there anything we're overlooking here for this to be a competitive game? Where do you kind of sit just on the overall tenor of what this thing looks like over the course of 3 hours on Saturday night?
I guess maybe, like, if I'm trying to come up with a scenario to where the game is close, it is Tagovailoa's first true road start. So you can factor that in to an extent. And then I guess the other aspect of it would be, well, what if Alabama just decides they're going to shorten this game because the less Ole Miss is on the field, the better. And so what if they just decide, well, we know we can run the ball against them. We know we can do whatever we want against them, but let's start chewing the play clock and kind of shortening the game that way. Alabama doesn't really typically do that. It's not that they don't subconsciously like hurry up, but they typically haven't been a team that just tries to run the play clock down to one every single time and then snap the football. I mean, they're not Wisconsin in that sense, but perhaps that shortens the game. And so there are fewer possessions, and if there are fewer possessions, maybe Alabama only gets into the high 30s and Ole Miss only touches the ball eight times, and then maybe they get a couple scores. But I don't know. I'm very much in my head on this game because you look at both numbers. You look at the line, and you look at the total. I believe right now currently on the line it's like 78% of the money is on Alabama. And then 94%, I believe, is on the over. So
that makes the over so scary.
Right. So that gives me hesitation. You're right. I'm not as hesitant on Alabama's number as I am the over. But then I think about like last year. Think about how many games there were like 90-something% of the money of bets and money on the Patriots, and they would still cover.
Yeah, it's a lot like that 2011 Alabama-LSU college football season where you just bet on them no matter what every week, no matter what the line was.
They couldn't set the number high enough.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but when I watch Alabama play this year, I think it's the scariest Alabama team that he's had since being down there because on top of the defense being the Alabama defense, he's finally got a true. I mean, when I just feel like that they are the scariest offense we've ever seen because they truly have a playmaker at quarterback. And you can look at it from a gambling perspective and know, okay, this smells like a rat. But at the same time, like, you can also look at it from a football perspective. It's week three. I don't know how Ole Miss stops the run. I don't know how Ole Miss stops the pass. I do think Ole Miss is good enough to score, but I don't know if they're good enough to score more than three times.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what it comes down to for me. Like,
I'm with you, man. I don't see it, and I've had this conversation. You know, I worked in Alabama all those years, and so people from over there call, and they want to do radio shows and such, and I get it. And I worked in that state, and it sells, and I understand. They're trying to make a story where there's not a story. There's no empirical data at all. None. That supports the idea that this team defensively is ready to line up and stop someone, anyone, much less a team that is loaded with NFL players all over, that has a potential Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback in Tagovailoa, elite running backs, talented receivers. There's nothing to support that. And this expectation that Ole Miss is going to line up and put 35 to 42 points on the board against Alabama is patently absurd, in my opinion. It's unfair to Jordan Tamu and to A.J. Brown and to D.K. Metcalf and to the kids on that offense for that to be the expectation, my opinion.
No, I completely agree. And that's the other thing. For the most part, when Ole Miss has been playing this year with Tamu at quarterback and even going back into last year, it's never been like this kind of game where he knows going in, he's going up in against an elite defense and he has to score every possession. Every other game that he's had to, even when he gets into these shootouts, they know that they've been going up against, like, they're the type of shootouts where everyone feels good and everyone keeps scoring. But on the other end of the field, there's never been an elite caliber defense. I mean, I guess the state defense, but even with that one, you know, I feel like that was, what, two or three explosive plays? And then after that, I mean, at the end of the game, I think Jordan was still under 50%, wasn't he?
Yeah, right around there. You know, and kind of what it makes me think of a little bit is, now look, it's Phil Longo's job. It is what it is. I'm not necessarily saying, hey, have pity for him or anything. But even from a player standpoint, I think you saw this from Shea Patterson last year through much of the early season as well with the pressing. It's a lot like that pitcher who doesn't have much offense and knows he's got to be perfect every single game, and it just stresses you and stresses you and stresses you where one mistake's a problem. That's sort of until the defense improves where Ole Miss is offensively, because they have to hold serve. It's constant pressure on them every time they get the ball. Play calling probably changes a little bit. Even against Southern Illinois, Ole Miss, you know, when they got into a third down situation, hey, let's use some one-on-ones. Let's just throw it deep, try to get back on schedule here. I think over the weight of time with it, it also wears you down and makes you potentially have dumber or at least more reckless decisions on an offensive standpoint.
I completely agree, because you don't have any faith. For instance, if Alabama gets into a situation where it's 3rd and 12, I don't know how that happens. I guess technically they could have maybe had two or three holding penalties, and then Alabama just ran it on 1st and 30 and then 2nd and 20, and then you'd have 3rd and 12.
Okay.
But say they get into that situation and they're backed up in their own territory. Alabama's not super concerned about having to convert that. If they punt it and let the defense play, like, that's not the end of the world for them. Every punt for Ole Miss feels like the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, just bottom line. I mean, that's kind of where it is right now. Ole Miss missed 14 tackles last week against Southern Illinois. As I told Neil a few minutes ago, the two Alabama running backs are averaging almost 4 yards a carry after contact so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, to me, missed tackles to me are always – missed tackles are very similar to me for fouls in basketball. A lot of times you're fouling because you're out of position. A lot of times you're missing tackles because you can't get to the spot. You can't make the tackle. I'm well aware because I could never get to the spot and never make the tackle. I understand what it's like to be athletically at a disadvantage when you're trying to tackle people. That's exactly what I see with Ole Miss. I think back to that Houston game, and everyone goes, I don't like these white jerseys. It makes them look small. Well, we saw them in the red jerseys last week. They still look small.
They're small and they're slow. We've had this debate that's going on, and I get criticized because people tell me I'm criticizing other media, and I'm not trying to, but sometimes if you just earn the criticism, it is what it is. We are having this debate week after week, press conference after press conference, where everyone keeps talking about fits and eyes and all of this, frankly, pardon my French, everyone, bullshit.
Yes.
It's whether you think Wesley McGriff is a great defensive coordinator, the worst defensive coordinator in history, or anywhere on that scale, there were plays on Saturday against Southern Illinois that went for touchdowns, that went for long gains, where defensively, schematically, the defense was in the right place. It just didn't make the play. That's
yes.
Talent. Were there times when the defender wasn't in the right place? Yes, but it's very hard to look at that film and say, is that because he wasn't coached to be in the right place? Or is that because he just couldn't get to the right place? It's kind of like your NBA analogy. You can be the guy that is assigned to guard LeBron James, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be in the right place the entire time, and he still goes for 37 and 11.
Take a break in our talk with Jeffrey to tell you the podcast is also brought to you by Locker Stockers. Customer places the order, and they handle purchase and delivery to your locker or suite prior to game day at Vaught Hemingway Stadium. Same deals will be set up for the Pavilion and Swayze Field as well. You can get some discounts and different things by using Locker Stocker and tell them about the podcast, 662-586-1487 or info at lockerstockers.com. 2 home games in a row here with Alabama and Kent State, so don't wait. Let them help you today.
We've been telling you about Robert Gambrell and Gambrell & Associates for a while. Robert knows that many of the people listening to this podcast will never need a bankruptcy attorney or a Social Security disability attorney. However, many of you may be interested in reviewing your financial situation to consider asset protection. This is a part of what a good bankruptcy attorney does. Many of you have friends or relatives that get into difficult financial situations. Gambrell & Associates helps many people work through their times of hardship, whether that results in filing a bankruptcy petition or working to avoid a bankruptcy filing. Others are primarily worried about their credit scores. For those people, many times they refer their clients to Brian McLaurin, another advertiser on this podcast. Whatever your needs may be, you, your relatives, or friends can get a free consultation for 1 hour or more to help make your decision on what is best for you. AVVO.com. or superlawyers.com to search for Robert Gambrell, or you can just call him 662-281-8800.
Now back to Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Bacarins hotline.
And on the plays when you're not in the right place, he has a Sports Center highlight. That it's that simple. It's both. You can be both out of place and not talented enough to make the plays. And that's where this defense is. There is a dearth of talent on defense. We went into this offseason, and everyone would say, and I'm being somewhat hyperbolic, but it was a lot of people, well, there's no way they can be worse than last year. And because there's so much Homer in the media today, in general, people like us who would say, well, I mean, technically, yeah, they could actually be worse. They lose their best players. They lose the best players off that defense. Breland Speaks is playing in the NFL. Marquise Haynes is playing in the NFL. DeMarcus Gates was a very good SEC linebacker. Taylor Polk was a guy who was always in the right place. They lost those people, and now they lose Jalen Jones in week one to an ACL injury. It is absolutely possible that they're worse on defense this year.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's as simple as They're not big. They're not fast. And then on top of that, they appear to have very bad eye discipline, and they don't appear to be technicians, if you will. Like, oftentimes you have teams that don't have the service academies. They're at a talent disadvantage. But when you watch the service academies, you can tell that from a technical standpoint, technique, everything, they are dependent on that, and they can make plays. Ole Miss doesn't have any of that on defense. So, and you're just expecting me that because it's going to be a night game at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium that all of a sudden they're going to correct that? I just can't. I don't even. That's the thing. Like, I would say I can't bet on that. But Neil, I don't know how a reasonable human being could expect that.
No, it's what's kind of interesting to watch on Saturday, and it is the one thing that I'm going in with an interest to watch. It is, I think there has been so much emphasis on McGriff's part on let's stop the run. And I understand that because everyone spent the entire offseason writing about how they couldn't stop the run. That on these third and one type plays, third and two, where the down and distance calls for the probability of a run play, they sure are selling out to stop the run. Linebackers are getting out of place. They're slipping a tight end behind them, 25-yard gain, first down. There's those kind of plays. I think what will be interesting is, can Wesley McGriff and John Sumrall and that defensive staff, can they convince these guys to just be disciplined, to play your assignment? And now, are you going to lose? Yeah. Are they going to get yards? When it's third and one, don't bite on the fake. And then if he gets the ball on a dive and he gets 3 yards, you make the tackle. First and 10, keep going. That's the only scenario in my mind where the game potentially gets interesting, where if you do that and you're disciplined and you make them earn it, if you will, maybe they make a mistake. I mean, they're human. I said this to Ryan Brown on the Beer Garden, and you'll hear that later today or tomorrow, talking about it. He is a young player, as you referenced, making one of his first true road start. It is, at some point this season, Tua Tagovailoa will make a bad read. At some point this season, he will make a bad throw. At some point this season, he will make a bad decision. At some point this season, one of those running backs will fumble a football. They will make mistakes. You can bet on them. And maybe in this scenario, they make those mistakes on Saturday. You capitalize on them and give yourself a chance in the second half. Otherwise, I don't see it. And the other thing I'll say is, we along those lines, we always joke about, you know, Vegas, they didn't build those buildings on credit and stuff, and they didn't. But Vegas is not perfect. Vegas has had bad lines before. Quite possible this is just one of those bad lines.
Well, Vegas wants money. They don't necessarily want to predict the final score. Right. They're two completely different things.
But my point is they've made mistakes before.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They've taken a bath on games before.
And I think it's also conceivable that they've made the line I don't know. I mean, sometimes they'll do these counterintuitive movements to try and protect themselves from, if you were able to put it into like a money line parlay. Like, I don't know exactly why they're doing it. Like, I think the problem is right now, I don't think that they can adjust to this Alabama team because we've never seen one this complete.
What stat would you like to have to predict the betting side of this game for Saturday? If they gave you a final stat.
Yards per play.
Just straight yards per play?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's yards per play. You could also make a case for turnovers, but
you can always make a case for turnovers, obviously.
But if you give me yards per play and I see that Alabama's getting like 7.4 yards per play or something, it's a blowout.
I want to see quarterback hurries. Can Ole Miss generate any pass rush at all? Can they at least get Tua out of rhythm a little bit at times, because they haven't done that so far this year.
But I mean, Louisville did that. I'll give Louisville credit. Louisville got to him a little bit.
Yeah, but Alabama offensively, from a stat standpoint, it's only given up 8 quarterback hurries all year.
I think this is another question that I have as we quickly wrap up. Whoever your, I'll say Dave Aranda, just from perception standpoint, in which I think most people that are around college football would say he does one of the best jobs coordinating the defense. If Dave Aranda had this team, do you think it would be significantly better?
No.
Because I don't either.
No, I don't. Not significantly. No.
I mean, Neil, I do think you make a very good point about how, because Ole Miss heard all last fall, all spring, about they can't stop the run, they can't stop the run, and typically most people want to try and stop the run first. I do think that is a huge part of their mentality, in which they've kind of built this defense around trying to stop the run. Well, the reason why they couldn't stop the run was not because of a scheme. They couldn't stop the run because they were getting blown off the football, and then they had undersized linebackers.
There's one play from Saturday that sticks out in my mind. It keeps sticking out in my mind, and it's funny because I'm getting kind of accused from people of going after Wesley McGriff, and if anything, right here, I'm defending him. It was at the end of the first half. Southern Illinois had less than a minute, and they had the ball on their own 33, if I remember correctly. It may have been the 31. I don't know. And they ran an out route.
Yep, I remember this exact play you're talking about.
And the quarterback made a nice throw, and the receiver caught the ball, and Ole Miss was playing, you know, kind of cushion defense, because that's what you do. You don't want them to go over the top in that scenario. And the corner, and I can't remember who it was.
I think it was Miles Hartsfield.
I think you're right. I think it was Hartsfield. Misses the tackle. The receiver breaks up the field and outruns Ole Miss's safeties to the end zone. On the field, they called it down at the
– I believe it was Raphael Leonard, who's from Starkville.
I think that's right. I think Leonard outran to the end zone. They called him out at the one. They reviewed it. It was a touchdown. So that's athleticism to avoid the tackle, or strength to break the tackle. And then it's speed to beat the safeties, who should have had an angle. – That's talent. That's not scheme. That's talent. And I know, because look, I'm a Cubs fan. I cheer for the guys that wear the Cub uniform. I get it.
Well, reading between the lines, the coaches haven't said it was scheme. They said they ran the same crowd.
I mean, so people said, well, McGriff called out the players. The problem is McGriff's in a really tough spot after these games, because he can say, look, we're not good enough. And then he has to go look at those kids and tell them, you're good enough. Or he can do this baloney, and it's not his fault. I'd say everyone says it, but that it's about focus. It has nothing to do with focus, because if it had to do with focus, you're not waiting until halftime to address focus.
It's where you got to do what Hugh was great at. We lost a lot of one-on-ones, in which basically all he's saying is, hey, man, I had the guys in the right spot. They couldn't make the play.
Yeah. It's why last season, and it's really a shame. The shame of the whole escort massage, erotic massage gate, whatever you want to call it, the shame of it was that it allowed him to not have to stand there on that sideline and be accountable for the recruiting disaster that he'd put in that program. Bottom line.
No, it's just a shame that we have the climate that we have today in America.
Well, that's true.
That's what's holding Hugh Freeze back.
That's it.
Who do you got today, Jeff?
So today I'll be hosting Eric's show. Neil's going to join me at the bottom part of the second hour, so about 3:25. For those of you that are listening before then, make sure you tune in. You can always stream us live. Just go to 92.9ESPN.com. You can always stream us live. I will also have Ryan Glasspiegel from The Big Lead, Craig Unger, the president and GM of the Memphis Redbirds. The Redbirds are in the PCL championship game. That series tied at 2 as it comes back to Memphis on Friday. So we'll have him, and then coming up today on Jeff's show, Jeff will have Stephen White of SB Nation and Doc Holliday. Again, both former Memphis area high school players. Doc played at Memphis in the CFL for a while. Steve played for the Bucks and the Jets for about 7 or 8 years in the NFL.
Have a good day. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys.
Thanks to Jeffrey for joining us there. The podcast is also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website. They have a great app and located in downtown Holly Springs. 662-252-2321 is the phone number. They deliver wherever you are and have all your pharmaceutical needs, and also now in Oxford as well, with G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar, and they deliver local in the Oxford area.
The Ole Miss soccer team returns home on Sunday. They take on the Memphis Tigers for Kicking Cancer Night. Bring the family out. Help kick cancer with the Ole Miss soccer team. For more info, visit olemisssports.com. As you probably have picked up over the course of the week listening to the podcast, the Ole Miss football team returns to Vaught-Hemingway on Saturday as they take on number one Alabama at 6 p.m. Tickets still remain and are available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. Guests join us on this podcast on the Billy's Pecans hotline. Go to billyspecans.com. That's billiespecans.com. Tell them whatever you're looking for. They'll take care of you. They've got everything from the pecans, the toasted pecans, the cinnamon spice pecans, all the different varieties of chocolate pecans, sugar-free chocolate pecans, cheese crispies, coffee cakes, pecan brittle. It's all there, man. It's fantastic. Pecan toffee. It's all there. It's fantastic. Whether you're getting ready for a tailgate, whether you're starting to think about Christmas parties, Thanksgiving parties, corporate gifting, just get in touch with Stacy and Bailey and the people at Billy's Pecans. And please do us a favor and tell them that you heard about it on the podcast. We would appreciate that. Again, billyspecans.com.
So we jump right back into the interviews now. We're going to go with Cecil Hurt, longtime columnist in the state of Alabama, talking Tide, Rebels, and also some Nick Saban. So we'll head to Cecil now on the Billy's Pecans hotline.
Yes.
3, 2. Cecil, thanks for the time. I look forward to seeing you this weekend. We've talked a lot about Ole Miss on the show all week, obviously, just kind of what we do. I'm curious about this Alabama team, though. I mean, I know it's another very good Alabama team. They're number one in the country. It have been for quite some time. They're the defending champs. Yet, offensively, this seems like a far more dynamic offensive team than maybe what we're used to with Alabama throughout the Nick Saban era.
Well, it goes back to having a quarterback who's a really unique talent into a guy with tremendous vision, not great size. You know, you'll look at him and you'll say, well, this isn't Cam Newton. This isn't a 6'4", 6'5", guy out there running around. But he's got a plus arm, tremendous downfield vision, tremendous poise. So he's a unique talent, and it's a unique situation that they've also got a quarterback that's taken them to the national championship game twice. So that's a dynamic that Nick's had to work with. But as much as Jalen's done for Alabama, and as much as I think most Alabama fans want him to succeed, you just have to recognize, and Nick had to recognize, that Tua's a once every 20 years kind of player.
How has Jalen Hurts sort of handled this? I mean, I know there's been some moments where maybe it hasn't been the most graceful thing in the world, but like you said, I mean, he's a guy that won a bunch of games at Alabama, and to lose your job's never fun. How has he kind of handled just the way this has worked out the first couple weeks of the season?
Well, first of all, now they don't do much media. He's only done one media opportunity since A-Day. But he's been okay. It's frustrating probably in some ways, but he's a competitor. He understands what his situation is. He can graduate at the end of this year, and whether he redshirts and has 2 years or whether he's just a one-year guy, he'll have a lot of options. I think he wants to be – he's a teammate. He wants to be part of this team. He wants to participate if they make the playoffs again, if they make the championship game again. I think that's what he's indicated he wants to do and to keep competing for the job. And he does get frustrated because, as you know, as anybody who listens knows, there are a world of people, and you've lived in Alabama. You know what it's like when you're the quarterback at Alabama. I guarantee you more people know Jalen Hurts than Kay Ivey. I'll promise you that's the case. Kay Ivey's the governor, in case you don't know. So it gets frustrating because he has to hear or see, no matter how many filters you put on it, no matter how much you try to avoid it, you hear everybody saying Jalen should do this or Jalen should do that, or even worse, Jalen said this or Jalen said that when he hadn't done any interviews. And so that gets frustrating. I think he was frustrated about that in August when practice started, and he vented some of that frustration. But, you know, in terms of being a problem for Nick, I don't think he is. You know, I don't think it's that kind of situation. So it'll work out. You never know. First of all, he's nobody wants to see this happen, but he is one play away from being the starter again, and he knows that too. So he's a valuable asset. They can put him in situations, and it's tough for a defense to prepare for both of them. So I think he's been fine.
You've covered this league a long time. Have you ever seen a team from a statistical standpoint, referring to Ole Miss for a minute, have you ever seen a team from a statistical standpoint have this much disparity where the offense has had this much success and the defense has had so little success?
I'd have to think about it. Defenses are just measured differently than they used to be. I was talking to somebody the other day, and on the fringes of my memory, because as you say, I've been covering this league a long time, is the great Alabama Ole Miss shootout in 1969 that was televised. That's one reason why people who are old enough to remember it so well. It was just so rare to be televised back then. But the Archie Manning, Scott Hunter game, what a great shootout, what excitement, what thrills. That game was 33-32.
Yeah.
You know, that game wouldn't even hit the projected over-under for this game. And, you know, people talked about that for years as a great passing display and you know, great excitement. And so football is just different. So in terms of disparity, in terms of teams being offense heavy, the teams you think of as being tremendous offensively in the SEC have mainly been Florida teams, and Spurrier had pretty good defenses. Now, the Reeves-Alvarez Florida teams, if you go back that far, were mainly offense and mainly passing the ball. But now Ole Miss is pretty unique from what I can judge through the first two games.
There's been some talk about Alabama's secondary. It's young. It's whatever. You're around it. You see it all the time. Mm-hmm. Is there any scenario in your mind at all where this defensive secondary struggles with A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, DeMarcus Lodge, and what is a very talented wide receiver core?
Well, sure. There will be situations where Ole Miss just throws a jump ball and A.J. Brown goes and gets it because he's that kind of talent. Alabama will defend RPOs differently than probably the first two opponents without having – I watched most of the Texas Tech game, I'll be honest. I did not see any of the Southern Illinois game.
Consider yourself blessed.
But Alabama, in general, defends RPOs a little bit differently because they have big safeties, they have big corners, and they'll not give you – in many instances, the easy yardage, the 4 or 5 yard pass that's sort of automatic, that's almost a modern day version of the run game, you know, where you just throw to the check down guy and you get your 3 or 4 points. They'll dare you to beat them deep. They'll dare you to protect your quarterback long enough to beat them deep and to beat their athletes deep. They do have athletes. They're very athletic in the secondary. They are young. They don't have a Minka Fitzpatrick back there. But their safeties are, you know, Deontay Thompson's good, Xavier McKinney's good. Patrick Surtain will be a NFL player. He's probably the number one freshman defensive back in the country last year and is making a move. So that area is actually good and deep. They're actually more thin up front. Their front seven is good, 1 through 7. You know, the starting seven guys are really good, but they dip pretty – and this is a difference in Alabama teams. They dip pretty substantially when they have to substitute with those guys. So can they get the run stopped? Can they get, you know, Tamu to not keep on the options and hurt them in that way? Ole Miss will gain some yards, but they'll defend differently because they have different talent than the other teams that Ole Miss has space.
Yeah, and to that point, Phil Longo's made this point earlier in the week that Alabama defensively in the red zone is so good. They'll bleed a little bit 20-20, but they are really good inside the red zone, and a lot of that is to what you just said.
Yeah, they've got talented guys. Again, not quite the same on the defensive front. You don't just replace Deron Payne. And people think Alabama does, and they certainly recruit well. That's not my point. But you're talking about at the end of last year, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick's an NFL guy. Deron Payne's an NFL guy right then. So it's hard to replace that in the first few games of the year, and they won't. But Quinnen Williams has really stepped in nicely on the defensive line. Isaiah Bugs has been a great junior college pickup for me. He's in his second year out of junior college now. Raekwon Davis, who a lot of people in Mississippi are familiar with, freak size, huge size, and you've got to work your way around him. He hadn't broken out yet, I don't think, this season. Dylan Moses has been a famous recruit since the eighth grade, and there's a reason athletically. So they do try to match up with you and just out-athlete you both in the red zone and in the middle of the field. With that said, nobody shuts anybody out anymore, and that's not going to be the case.
I want to get to a couple of big-picture things because I value your opinion on them maybe more than a lot of the other people who sometimes give those opinions. But if the football gods came down, Cecil, and told you that Alabama did not win the SEC this year, did not go to the championship, somebody from the SEC did, who would you guess? Would it be Georgia based on what
Georgia
Kirby
probably
has built?
Yeah. Georgia, who won the SEC last year, just parenthetically, although Alabama did win the national championship. But Georgia seems to have that kind of talent. I was not on the South Carolina bandwagon last week anyway, and then when you watch the game, it was two different levels, I thought, of ability. And Georgia's got that. They've got it at almost every position, and I think Fromm's a good quarterback. So it would probably be Georgia. The other team that I'll be fascinated to see them this weekend is Auburn. Auburn's really good defensively, for one thing. I mean, really good. So it's and they would be possible if they were in there. Their schedule dictates so much, and to have to play at Georgia and then turn around and play at Alabama, yeah, that's really hard. So I don't think their schedule favors them, but I think they have enough talent that I could see that happening.
And then I wanted to get your thoughts quickly on Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher, and you watched, I'm sure, some of that game on Saturday. In your mind, was that a harbinger of things to come for A&M, or was that just kind of one of those one-off emotional games?
Yeah, a little of both, I thought. And Clemson played some games like that. You know, they've played Auburn that way the last 2 years, where it's close and they do just enough, and they're good. There's no question that Clemson's really good. But I'm not convinced that Clemson's any tougher than what you get a few weeks in the SEC. And that being said, when they had Deshaun Watson, they were, because they had Deshaun Watson, and they could develop into that this year. I'll be interested to see how much more Trevor Lawrence plays for them. But as far as A&M goes, they've got athletes. You know, again, they're one of the SEC teams that benefits from size and geography. That they don't just run out of players, even in a coaching transition. Jimbo didn't walk in there with no players. So if they're a little tougher, play a little tougher, I think long-term they're going to be very successful. This year, they come to Alabama the following week after the Alabama-Ole Miss game, and it'll be tough for them to come into Tuscaloosa. So it'll be tough against Auburn. It'll be tough against State. It'll be tough against Ole Miss, and they won't win all of those. But I think he will build a program, because I think he'll get a lot of athletes. Texas being down, they have a little to do with that, but I think they were going to do that anyway.
A couple of Saban questions as we finish, if you don't mind humoring me. This is where I'm just kind of curious to get your input on it, because no one knows that program better than you do, with maybe the exception of people like Nick Saban who are in it. How different is the Alabama program if I guess, what was that, 10, 11 years ago, if maybe Mal Moore and the people there panic a little in that December and the Rich Rodriguez thing happens or they hire someone else, how different is the Alabama program today than what it would have been had Nick Saban not happened?
Yeah, it's almost impossible to speculate because there probably would have been a coaching change in between there. I don't think anybody could have come in. And nobody could have accomplished what Nick's accomplished. Five national championships in 9 years is ridiculous. I mean, that's really an amazing achievement. So I think they'd be a lot of good programs, and you don't know how that skews. You know, would they be where Tennessee is? Would they have made hires that just didn't work out and got deeper and deeper down? I don't think so. You know, they have a lot of resources that they'll bring to bear if that's the case. If they're in, you know, a losing streak against Auburn and so forth, they'd have gone out and brought in somebody, maybe Jimbo, who knows. So it's impossible to know which way that would skew. I mean, they could be sitting there. They could be where Georgia is, where they got kind of the right guy and he worked it out. But it wouldn't be where it is. That was just the correct alignment of the planets for Alabama. And you have to be one of the many things that Coach Bryant and Nick had in trouble. They are larger than life egos. And I don't mean that they're egomaniacs. I don't mean that they don't see the process for what it is, but they have absolute confidence in what they do and that they are going to be successful. And they are able to convey that to people. And the situation here is they get 100% administrative support for whatever that vision is.
And then last thing, and I know you've been asked this question probably thousands of times over the last few years, but I've never asked you, so I get to ask it once. How much longer in your mind does Nick Saban do this? I know people say the thing about there's nothing else he could ever do, And then other people have rumored that Manny's thought about it before. You probably have a better feel on this than anyone in your mind, assuming that he, you know, stays healthy, that something catastrophic doesn't happen to him from a health standpoint, that he has just a normal aging process, if you will. How much longer does he do this?
Well, he's a different personality. He's not a Dabo or a Bobby Bowden personality where he wants to settle in and be, and Dabo's young for this, but that does strike me as his personality, you know, kind of the grandfather of the program, Bobby Bowden type, Joe Paterno type, setting aside the incident at Penn State, but personality type.
Sure.
I don't know that Nick's that kind of personality. Now, his family is happy here. This is really probably home for them as much as anywhere has been home. He hasn't moved around. He's been here a long time relative to coaches. So you have to examine that. But I think if you know, he is driven to win. And I think if he ever does reach the point where he feels like he's done everything he can do here, people say, well, what more you could do? But there's things you can do. But if he reaches that point, he might, if it's the exactly right situation, he might take a look at it. Now, what's the exactly right situation, particularly if you're not going back to the NFL? I don't know who could. First of all, you know, somebody would have to be able to pay him. Second of all, they'd have to give him the same kind of free hand administratively that Alabama's able to give him. And that's easier said than done. And that was, you know, a real stumble. I don't think he was ever going to Texas, but that was one of the reasons he wasn't ever going to Texas, was because he wasn't clear, you know, what the chain of command would be. Here he's clear of that, if nothing else. You know, maybe an Ohio State would intrigue him. Maybe a Notre Dame would intrigue him, where he could show that he could do it in another place, but maybe not. So he could go. I could easily see Nick going another 7 years here, or I could see something stimulating his interest and him wanting to make one more try somewhere else.
He had the one failure in his career, if that's fair to call it that, and it probably is, with the Dolphins and the NFL. Is there? I know he says there's not, but do you sense that there's any part of him that still wants to scratch that itch?
Maybe a little bit. I'd be fascinated when Belichick finally leaves the Patriots if he might not want to do that, but. he also likes to win, and he would have to be more comfortable. He would have to have more control. He'd have to have a quarterback that could win right away. That would be what the first criteria would be. He wouldn't want to flounder around with the Bills. You know, he wouldn't do that. But it would be possible, and I don't think that's what would happen. But when Belichick leaves the Patriots, I'll be interested to see if they make a run at it.
Yeah, it's one of those what ifs that's always fascinating on so many levels, from Alabama to the Saints to football in New Orleans to a lot of different things. What happens if the Dolphins doctors don't flag Drew Brees? If Nick Saban has Drew Brees, you know, I mean, who knows how everything would change? We'll never know. But it is one of those fun what-ifs to kind of go down that rabbit hole, because a lot of things could be really different today if Drew Brees is the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins in 2006, 2007, as opposed to Dante Culpepper.
Sure. Nick might have been a success with the Dolphins. He might have had, you know, at least wanted to stay there two or three more years, and he'd be the head coach. You know, he'd shown up after Urban left Florida. He'd be the head coach at Florida, right?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Who knows?
Well, hey, thanks for the time. Safe travels over here. Look forward to seeing you over the weekend.
Okay, look forward to it, Neil. Thanks.
Thanks. The Oxford Park Commission currently registering for youth basketball until October the 5th, so go sign up now. Leagues are open ages 5 to 15. The cost is $50 per child. There's a multiplayer discount for families. This year's season will begin on December the 4th. If you want to learn more or sign up, go to oxfordparkcommission.com for more information.
You forgot the number one hypothetical of that whole Nick Saban thing, which is Houston Nutt wins the SEC West at Ole Miss.
He does.
He does. Going away.
Absolutely does.
Maybe two in a row.
Isn't that fascinating?
Maybe 08 and 09.
Because they would have won in Tuscaloosa against...
In 08.
Yeah.
He wins the West in the very first year of his tenure after an 0-8 Ed Orgeron, potentially.
Okay, you want to play this out a little bit? Because here's what's fascinating. Now, there's one variable in this hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say Nick Saban's still with the Miami Dolphins in 2008 and 2009. I agree with you. I think Ole Miss wins the West both years. How much better, if at all, does Houston Nutt recruit at Ole Miss following those seasons if Alabama's not over there being Alabama?
I don't know.
Because if he's not recruiting any better, the fall off happens just as it did. And man, oh man, is Pete Boone and Ole Miss put in a tight spot, because how do you fire a coach that took you to Atlanta 2 years in a row?
You're arguing that they beat Bama in 08, which means they're at worst 6-2 in the SEC in 08, which is good enough. Because third place in the SEC in 08 was LSU at 3-5.
No. If Nick Saban's not in Tuscaloosa, Houston Nutt wins the SEC West in 2008. I don't know whether he wins the whole SEC, but he wins the SEC West.
Yeah, I don't care about that. That's not the point.
They're in Atlanta. They're playing another game in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then in 2009,
they end up finishing one game behind LSU, but again, who knows, whatever. Let's play it out.
But they beat LSU.
They did.
So they would have won the tiebreaker.
If they tied them, yes. But see, both teams lost to Alabama, so I'm having a kind of a hard time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you potentially still fall one game behind LSU.
Okay, but let's say they win one of the 2 years.
Yeah, sure.
And the other year they would have won one more game. They go to the Capital One. Whatever.
Yeah, 10-3.
Do they recruit differently?
My gut says not enough to solidify it.
So not enough to make a tangible difference.
I still think Houston had a mentality where he was not ever going to, and I know it's dumb to say considering we're saying he's going to win the West in this situation, but I don't think long-term-wise Houston ever had the mentality that Ole Miss was going to be that perennial power in the SEC.
Oh, I agree with that. Do you think his attitude changes if he's in Atlanta a couple years in a row?
Yeah, maybe. Or he just gets cocky and maybe he just sits on his self even more. I don't know.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know the answer, but I mean, no doubt he wins it in 08, though.
Oh, yeah.
From 0-8 Ed Orgeron to SEC West champs 1 year. They lose to Wake Forest.
Because they damn near went to Alabama and won.
30-24, wide open guy down the field. Yeah.
The one throw Snead probably wishes he had.
Oh, no doubt about that. Because
that's a game winner.
Now, it doesn't win the West or anything, but it's still a game winner, yeah.
It would have been a big win.
Yeah. Bama went 8-0 in the league that year, I think.
God's honest truth, I walked off the field that day, and Chris Vaughn happened to be right next to me. You remember this. And I said, y'all aren't losing again.
Yeah. And they go beat Arkansas the next week.
And he goes, man, I hope so. And you could see in his eyes, it was, we got to go to Fayetteville. It's going to be ugly. And he was right.
Yeah, I knew what was coming there.
Chris Vaughn told me that week, it's going to be so ugly. Yeah. And it was. Boy, was it ugly.
Yeah. So.
Uglier than any game at Tiger Stadium's ever thought about being.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a fascinating deal. And it almost happened.
It did.
Rich Rodriguez was the Alabama coach for a few hours. Rita Rodriguez has changed the SEC as much as any person on earth in the last 10 years.
That's fair. It's very true. Appreciate Jeffrey. Appreciate Cecil. Come see us tonight. We'll talk to you again soon.